Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Scott Kelly, Managing Director of Geometric Reliability. Welcome back, Scott.
Hi. Good to be here, James.
I want to thank you for taking the time to come talk to us again about the asset management model, and more specifically, cell number two within the plant excellence model, plant. And for those that don't remember, there are six cells to the overall model: people, plant, processes, policies and procedures, performance, and then proactive maintenance. Is that right, Scott?
That is absolutely correct.
Perfect. Can you give our listeners a very brief recap of previous cell we covered, people?
Be happy to. When in dealing with the different cells, right, and then trying to make it easy for everyone to understand, first and foremost, we talk about is the people. All success that you are going to sustain and actually see within your organization have to start with the people themselves. And then how are you organizationally developed? How are you organizationally structured, et cetera? So I don't want to go into a lot of detail because you can refer back to the other podcast. Today, we're going to talk about plant.
That's correct. And that's the second cell within the plant excellence model.
That's right. So in talking about the plant, what we're talking about is the actual physical assets of the facility itself. And I use the term plant, but it could be called a site. It could be called a mill. It could be a production facility. But we're really talking about all the physical assets. So if you look at it from that standpoint, the plant cell is not only going to talk about the physical assets, but it's going to talk about the methods, the risk evaluation, the mitigation strategies that you would employ to keep your plant or your equipment performing at an optimal level. So at the end of this cell, and what we're talking about here, is you should be able to answer the questions: what to maintain, why to maintain it, how do I maintain it, when should I maintain it, who will maintain it, where to document that information and action, what are the costs involved, and lastly, what is the consequence of non-performance or non-maintenance?
You know, Scott, you touched on a very good question there that I want to reiterate: why to maintain. Too often I find that a lot of organizations maintain everything instead of understanding why they should be maintaining what assets. And I'm very excited that we're going to explore this a bit throughout this cell. You know, driving down, you mentioned using the criticality, using that to help drive our strategies, our thought process behind what we're maintaining and why we're maintaining it. I think that's a vital piece that everyone needs to take away from this cell.
And we will be talking a little bit more about that. That's sort of the second facet. Remember, each of the cells is made up of facets, and then each of the facets is made up of specific components that roll up to that particular facet, which rolls up to the cell. The first thing that I think that we should discuss, and the first thing that I list, is some form of an EAM, a CMMS, or the new term that I hear going out is an AMS, or an asset management system. The reason that I think this is important, it's not that you want everything computerized, but you need to have some form of a backbone to give you your assets, listing of your assets in a parent-child relationship, a place where you can actually place information and create a register about that particular asset, its history, its financials, and everything that goes to it. Any comments you want to make on that, James?
You know, I hear a lot about hierarchies, setting up asset hierarchies correctly. I always reference back to the ISO 14224 standard as a framework to establish a good hierarchy. Do you have any experience with that, or do you have any other resources that you would recommend?
You know, there's a number of different ways in creating smart naming systems and numbering schemes, etc. But like you, I usually refer back to the 14224, the ISO 14224 standard, mainly because it is a standard. It's not saying that it is the best standard or the best way to do it, but it prevents organizations from doing what I have seen, where they argue for literally months on end on how to name assets and name structure. And by doing this, you remove all the subjectivity out of it. You remove all the politics out of it. You remove the personal attachment that people may have to specific naming of assets. And then when you're dealing with acquisitions that so many of the companies are going through today, if we standardize and use the ISO 14224, then when you incorporate a new company, and you have to rename things, but it also brings everybody to the same standard.
Absolutely. It is, to me, it's a foundational element for anyone looking to implement a CMMS or to go through and renew or update their asset hierarchy.
Right. So when I'm looking at a company and I'm starting look on the plant aspect of this, and as I said before, an EAM or an enterprise asset management system, a CMMS or computerized maintenance management system, or an AMS, an asset management system, really what I'm talking about is I am not advocating one over the other. I am not talking about selling CMMS or software. All I really care about from my standpoint is understanding that the software, the application that they're using has the capability to meet their business needs as it relates to asset management, maintenance, reliability, regulatory compliance, and financial aspects. So I think it's really important that we understand and everyone understands that I'm talking about this from an agnostic standpoint. I am not advocating one over the other.
Yeah, it needs to be fit for the business. Not everyone needs those super deep analytical tools within their EAM or CMMS. Some just need the basics, and it's about selecting the right one for your organization.
Right. And I appreciate you using that term fit for purpose or fit for business. You'll find that throughout my literature, I use that same term. And it's really important that everything you do from a structure standpoint, from a content standpoint, from a sophistication standpoint, is about fit for purpose within their business needs.
Absolutely. Okay?
So having a CMMS is only just a drop in the bucket. Most organizations I go to that have CMMSs, one, they're only using 5 to 15% of that functionality, but they also are not using it in almost any aspect. I mean, literally, I've been to plants that use a CMMS just for regulatory compliance, and they want to expand. Or I've seen them use the CMMS just to manage their spare parts. So I think it's important that we also reiterate the fact that it's a technical backbone that gives you the ability to create the asset management body, right? It's a backbone that we get to attach muscles and sinews and different components so that we have a repository of that information.
Absolutely. It's the database we live and die by as maintenance professionals or reliability professionals.
That's right. So next, and probably just as important, if not the most important thing, in my opinion, is a good foundation for a risk-based criticality analysis. So that's really two components there, risk-based and criticality. So the criticality analysis, in my opinion, as well as all the things that I advocate and how I move through the plant excellence model, stresses three components or three different areas. One is safety. We're talking about utilizing definitions on safe action. I particularly like to refer back to the API standards for safety and utilize those just from a standardization standpoint. Environmental, right? We're talking about descriptions that are listed by the OSHA process safety management if they're a PSM regulated business, but having environmental. And then the last piece is profitability. And traditionally, I look at profitability in multiple aspects in terms of operating costs on that piece of equipment, right? Looking at productivity or throughput on that piece of equipment, customer service related to different contracts that you need that piece of equipment to fulfill, and the last piece being quality. And there's a direct correlation between asset management, maintenance, reliability, and the quality of the product that is made.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the different types of impact unreliability will have on profitability. It's not just the lost production. It's, you know, that speed loss that you may have on that line. You're running at 140 parts per minute instead of 150. Those contracts or deadlines that you have to meet. And if you can't, then you're running that overtime. All that extra cost comes into play. And that, once you add all that up, downtime is a significant cost to the organization. So I'm glad you covered all different aspects of that.
Well, and when you're looking at a criticality evaluation, right, and there's a lot of theories on what is the right number of criticalities. I've seen three, I've seen five, I've seen as many as nine. It's really about understanding how many of your assets are critical and non-critical, and then how you have that distribution across those three aspects, right? Safety, environmental, and profitability. So when you're looking at a criticality analysis, you want to look at each one of those individually. Then you want to look at the combination of them combined. And that will give you a good understanding by definition of the criticality of the asset. Again, I want to reiterate, it's important that your criticality analysis incorporate safety, environmental, and profitability, not just profitability, which I see a lot of in the operational aspect. All they're looking for is how does this piece of equipment or asset deal with it from an operational standpoint. If you tie them all together, it actually brings all components of the company together into one definition so that you don't have different views from different aspects of the company.
Yep, absolutely. Okay? Now, one question on the criticality for you. You mentioned that, you know, you'll see three, five, up to nine different categories. Should the assets be just rated by what category it's in, or should they have like a risk priority number to help segregate and identify where they're specifically in the overall risk profile?
You sort of jumped ahead of me just from a standpoint of those are the criticality numbers. The next aspect in your criticality analysis, though, is that risk factor, and that's the probability of failure. And when I say probability of failure, I'm talking about probability of failure that you are experiencing at your plant, right? If you have no data, you can always turn to different aspects in industry like the OREDA data, O-R-E-D-A. But you should have a good understanding of what's going on with your assets, even if you're not looking at your database or your CMMS. Talking to your maintenance technicians, you should be able to understand if I'm having to do maintenance on this once a day, once a week, once a month, once every 6 months, once a year, once every 3 years, or I haven't touched it in 10 years, right? And by doing so, that risk factor gives you the ability to take the criticality number, multiply it times your risk number, and then actually have a risk ranking of all of your assets. And that's so crucial because you could have something that's highly critical, but it hasn't failed in 10 years. You know, you should understand that the risk factor on that asset is not necessarily very high. But I could have something that's moderately critical that's failing daily, and therefore it has a much greater risk aspect to me being able to meet my needs financially, environmentally, safety-wise, as it relates to conducting business on a day-to-day basis. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So utilizing a risk-based criticality, and it's really important to do this, that now you've ranked all of your assets and you can create different levels or barriers within that. And it's usually done through a financial means of creating those different levels. And you would say, attached to that, and this is the next piece that we're talking about, implant. So now we've got the CMMS, now with a listing of all of our assets in it. Next is we're talking about a criticality or a risk-based criticality analysis so that I can rank all of my assets. And then once I understand the risk of my assets, I can assign mitigation strategies that are proportional to that risk, i.e., and I'm referring to if, in fact, the risk is very high, and I'm talking 3 to 5% of my assets, then maybe I want to engage with traditional RCM or reliability-centered maintenance analysis, because I really need to understand all the ways that this particular piece of equipment or asset can fail, what are the failure modes, what's the consequence of that, and what are we going to do to mitigate that. The next level down is failure mode effects analysis, and this, in many cases, is a much larger group of assets. So we'll use failure mode effect analysis to do the same type of thing, to understand the consequence of failure, and if in fact it matters or not, what are we going to do to predict or prevent it from occurring? The next step down I use is I lump these into condition-based maintenance and predictive maintenance. And that group is, I don't need to do an analysis to understand that I need to engage or use some form of condition-based or predictive technology because industry has already documented that. For example, switchgear. Switchgear, I do not need to do an FMEA to understand that I should do, on a minimum, some type of an infrared scan on an annual basis just to ensure that we do not have an outage as a result of a switchgear faulting out.
Yeah, a great example of that sort of approach is NFPA 70B, which, if I remember correctly, is the guidelines for industrial electrical maintenance. It highlights what type of condition-based maintenance you should be doing at what frequency, for what type of gear, what voltages, and so on and so forth. It's super easy to use, and it, like you said, it takes a lot of that work out of it.
Right. So using these different mitigation strategies, I think, is very, very important because you're going to use the different strategies, i.e. RCM, FMEA, condition-based maintenance, predictive technology. The next one down is maintenance task analysis. And below that would be run to failure. All of these are true asset management mitigation strategies. And since we've identified the risk, we can actually defend that within our company. We can defend what we're doing. We can defend that to the CEO. We can defend that to the insurance company, to OSHA, to everybody outside of it, because we've done a proper analysis to identify the risk. And these are the level of mitigation that's proportional to risk. The whole purpose of doing these different strategies, though, or doing these different methodologies, is to create a preventive maintenance program. And that will be combined by utilizing tasks. In other words, I'm going to do a failure mode effects analysis, look at the consequence. What am I going to do to prevent or predict that from occurring? That creates a task. If I can identify the task, then I can identify the skills required to execute the task and the duration of time that's going to be required to execute that task. That's important because now we're talking about being able to identify how many assets we need or resources we need to maintain our facility of what type of skills that are required. So now we're actually tying this back to the people aspect where we were talking about training our individuals. So if we can identify the skills required, now we can do a comparative analysis of the number of people we have and the skills that they have. We can right-size the plant, and we can ensure that the people that we have working at the plant or facility have the right skills that are required to actually execute the tasks that we developed as a function of these different mitigation strategies. I know that that was long-winded, but does that make sense, James?
Absolutely. And, you know, like we talked about it before, and we'll bring it up again, you use the criticality to pick a maintenance strategy that is fit for purpose or fit for the business. And that's so vitally important. Not everything needs an RCM analysis. On the flip side, you can't run everything to failure either. So there needs to be a balance. And using criticality to drive that is absolutely critical to the long-term success of the organization. Once we know what we need to do, we can actually size and staff the department accordingly. A lot of times I hear, we don't have enough people. Well, if you look at your PM program, it's highly inflated. A lot of non-value-added work is in there. By using one of these structured approaches, we can actually understand what should be in there and staff accordingly. It's spot on.
Right. When you're dealing with this risk criticality and moving ahead and right-sizing the plant, so now we're really talking about understanding how we have to maintain the plant and what's going to be required to maintain the plant.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
The next piece down in the model that we were talking about, the plant model, is, and it's a specific facet, is preventive maintenance program optimization. And what we're talking about here is not having to go back and start over. It's how do we take a preventive maintenance program that's in place and optimize that. And if it's fairly sophisticated, and as you had mentioned, a lot of PM programs have a fairly inflated number of tasks that are required that are not adding value, et cetera. That's what we're talking about here. There's different methodologies in industry, and I'm not talking or advocating one over the other. I'm just talking about that is something that is an option of preventive maintenance program optimization. And then even if you create this from the ground up and you create a good PM program, once every 3 to 5 years, you need to go through some form of an optimization to ensure that you as the organization do maintain and actually streamline those PM programs so that you don't have an inflated program.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a variety of different ways to do that. Reviewing the failure mode effect analysis against history. You know, if you have good history, you can start looking at, you know, your YBOL analysis, reliability growth analysis, all those other great tools that are out there available to us.
Right. And as part of that PM optimization program, about every 2 years or so, I advocate that people readdress and relook at their risk model within the criticality. Because if you're doing things right, your risk should be going down. If you're doing things wrong, then your risk will be going up. And once, whether it goes down or goes up, then you can reapply those same strategies that you already have listed and the categories that you have listed to try and take it effect what we need to do to actually improve the uptime or the OEE of a piece of equipment.
Absolutely. I'm a huge advocate of reevaluating that criticality after you've done the RCM or failure mode effect analysis and implemented those recommended design changes. Because some of those design changes could have a huge impact on the overall criticality of that asset. So to me, those documents, whether it's RCM or PM optimization or failure mode effect analysis, they're living documents. Once you implement those things, you need to reevaluate both that particular failure mode and then the overall criticality of the asset.
Right. I agree completely. So let's keep moving forward here. In the next facet that we're going to talk about is MRO, or maintenance, repair, and maintenance, repair, and overhaul or operation. I've seen it used, you know, in both ways in industry. But what we're talking about here really is spare parts. We're talking about how do we generate and create an actual strategy for spare parts and spare parts management? Well, first thing that you would need in order to actually develop this spare parts strategy is you need to understand the risk and the criticality of your assets and being able to identify critical assets, and then also being able to identify what is the spare parts that we want to maintain within the facility so that we can actually optimize that, right? The reason this is so important is most organizations that you and I both go to, their spare parts inventory is heavy. And as a result of that, they also have obsolescence. Different numbers are out there, but the carrying cost of a spare part in inventory is between 20 and 30% of its original value on an annual basis. So you need to think about that from a manpower standpoint, environmental control standpoint, taxes, space, et cetera, inventory. Those things add up very quickly, and you can have very high carrying costs on your assets. I like to advocate what's called a PFEP, a plan for every part. And what we're talking about here is a methodology. There are tools out there. I have one as well. But there are tools out there that give you the ability to go through a logic to determine whether or not, one, are we going to stock it or not stock it, right? And when we look at that, we've made that decision that to stock it or not stock it, then you have to make the determination. So let's talk about stocking. Once we make the determination, we have to determine what is the maximum we want, what is the minimum we want, and then how many turns or how many of these different pieces of equipment are we going to, or spare parts going to buy on an annual basis, which determine what they call the ABC methodology. And the A being fast turning assets, B being medium or moderate turning, and C being slow or even no turning type assets because they're insurance spares. So that's important because you also want to tie your ABC methodology into your cycle count because you need to cycle count more on the A's than you do on the C's. So you structure all of your strategies as it relates to the pieces of equipment that you're going to actually have inside. Additionally, you need to determine what are considered to be critical spares. Now, a critical spare may or may not be attached to a critical asset. You may have something that's considered moderately critical, but due to long lead times, due to a one-off, due to the cost involved, due to a lot of specifics, then you have to determine what is the logic to determine a critical spare, and then you have to determine how many of those. So those are just some of the things to keep in mind when you're developing a strategy as it relates to your MRO. Now, from an MRO standpoint of what we are not going to stock, now you made the decision, I do not want to have it on hand, and that could be due to cost, due to a number of other things. If you're in the middle of an industrial area, you may be able to get that same part within 2 hours of picking up the telephone, calling, and receiving it on hand. You may have consignment contracts. It may make sense for you to determine that if I want to pay an annual fee to a company so that I can get a piece of equipment within a certain period of time, it's far better to actually pay 5% on an annual basis than it is to pay the 20 to 30% carrying costs and the loss of cash for sitting it on the shelf. And then when you go to use it, it may not even be an effective part, right?
Absolutely. The spare stocking strategy is so vitally important, and you touched on so many great pieces there. Using equations, determine min-maxes, having a plan for every part, and then leveraging suppliers and vendors to help us manage our inventory, whether they hold it, whether they come in and actually do a vendor-managed inventory for some of the materials. It's all vitally important, but it, once again, it's specific to that business. I've worked with people in Africa where it takes you 8 weeks to get a bearing. You have to stock a little bit more in that aspect, but as you mentioned, if you're in the middle of an industrial complex and you can get a bearing in 2 hours, your chances are you should be stocking a lot less.
Additionally, we talk about preventive maintenance on our assets, but we, in many cases, ignore and don't do preventive maintenance or any type of inspection on our spare parts that are sitting in the warehouse. And it's just as important for us to do that as it is to maintain the assets, because nothing is worse than having a motor that's been sitting on the shelf, exposed to elements, et cetera, et cetera. It's been there for a long period of time. We take the time and effort to put it in place, and then we find out it doesn't work. Well, we don't know if it worked when we put it on the shelf to begin with. So as part of this MRO strategy, you also want to have some type of a testing and acceptance of rebuilds or rotating equipment or critical assets before you even put them on the shelf. And then once they're on the shelf, you actually need to have some form of a PM or an inspection process that's built right in, just like you would any other asset, as part of the strategy to ensure that those pieces of equipment are going to be available and ready for you when you want them. And then one of those other key areas when you're dealing with MRO is you're talking about instrumentation, you're talking about cards and electronics, and proper storage and static protection against those type of things becomes inherently important as you go through the MRO. So if you look at budgets in a maintenance side of the house, 50% or almost 50% is what you spend on personnel, on their salaries and their benefits. But between 40 and 50% of the maintenance budget is on spare parts. And most organizations I go to put very little effort into managing and taking care of their spare parts properly.
Absolutely. It's a hugely overlooked area, and it can easily be addressed and deliver some major savings to any organization when done properly.
Right. One of the things that's also a facet within the plant, so we're moving on a little bit here, is what's called a physical asset program. And what I'm talking about here is your long-term replacement of capital assets. So we're talking about a capital plan, and again, 1, 3, and 5 year budgeting cycle on your capital spares and capital equipment, and standardizing on how you're going to determine what that budget is. It isn't as important to standardize on that if you're in one plant, But if you're in a multi-site environment, standardizing on that methodology for determining what the budget should be for your capital assets becomes more and more and more critical.
Absolutely. It has to stand up to the scrutiny from all the different plants of why one plant got this and the other plant didn't, and vice versa. When you have that defined criteria, it makes it easier to understand and digest.
And defend. Most organizations we go to, James, defending your capital budget is an annual battle, right? So if, in fact, you standardize on how you're going to do that within the company and it's pushed down and everyone understands exactly what it is, it becomes much easier to defend if, in fact, you're using the method that has been adopted by everyone within the company. Okay? The next item down is the Asset Integrity Management Program. What I mean by integrity, it's referring to the integrity of the system, not only from a physical containment standpoint, right? I.e., it's not leaking, but also from the integrity of being able to deliver whatever it is we're trying to deliver to all areas without any breaks or interruption or delay. And depending on the regulatory compliance, right, that may be necessary as you're relating to OSHA, i.e., integrity management is one of those key elements that is part of process safety management, those 14 elements. One of those all by itself is asset integrity and the management programs that go with that. So you need to actually take the time and effort to put together an asset integrity management program related mostly to leaks, but also to rotating equipment.
Absolutely. You know, it's often overlooked, and I believe I'm going to get this wrong, but I think there's, is it 10 or 13 U.S. states that don't require inspections on pressure relief valves, boilers, stuff of that nature? You know, if one of those fails, it's a major, major consequence. So that's why having an asset integrity management program is so vitally important.
Right. I agree with you completely. And I don't know the exact number of states that do not require it. Even if a state doesn't require it, in many cases, I go ahead and advocate that they do comply with it. And I do that only from a standpoint that regulatory compliance and regulatory changes are always occurring, and there's always being push. So it's easier to actually be the good steward, right, in basic care that's out there, or asset care in the chemical industry, and go ahead and implement that as if it was the case.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Okay. So if you look at it from a standpoint of the different facets within plant, it's probably the heaviest of all of the, of all of the different cells that I have, because there's so many issues that you're dealing with as it relates to the physical assets themselves and the cost involved in owning and maintaining them. So once again, I mean, as we talk through the different components of that or the facets that make up that cell, one is the EAM, CMMS, AMS, right? How are you going to actually use that backbone and manage that information? The next being a risk-based criticality analysis that gives you the ability to mitigate risk that is proportional, because we cannot do everything on everything. We have to actually mitigate that, but we also have to do it in a cost-effective manner. Okay, we want to talk about the MRO or the plan for every part that you're talking about. You want a PM optimization on an annual, biannual, or at least once every 3 years type of situation so that you can optimize your PMs. And then you want to go through and look at the different facets relative to a physical asset program and an asset integrity program. I think that if you can put those in place, then you're probably ahead of 80% of the companies that are out there.
Absolutely. It's a huge, huge improvement if you're able to implement that. And the benefits to the business would be fantastic. Scott, I want to thank you again for taking us through the next cell within the Plant Excellence Model, Plant. I know I walked away with some great knowledge. I'm sure our listeners did. As part of this, what we'll do is we'll make a PDF on this cell available to all our listeners. You can find it at hpreliability.com/plant, and you'll be able to download a PDF on this specific cell. Where can people find out more about you, Scott?
You can always reach out and touch base with me through the website of geometricreliability.com. You can also reach me on LinkedIn. I have both a company webpage as well as my own LinkedIn profile.
And I'll be sure to include the links to those within the show notes of the episode as well. Now, Scott, before we part ways, what is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this discussion today?
The one thing that I think is crucial relative to the plant is a good, effective risk-based criticality analysis. You will use it in just about every aspect of making a decision on your plant, the costs, the money spent, the risk involved. It's just, it becomes the heart and the soul of understanding what we should do and when we should do it.
I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you, Scott, for taking the time once again, and I'm looking forward to the next episode on processes. Once again, it'll be full of value add for our listeners.
Thank you again, James. I look forward to it myself.
All right. You have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.